This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Hey, everybody. Oh, we have got a good show today. It's actually really good timing for this. And some people might say, well, is it just because it's around Halloween? This topic that we're going to talk about, though, is universal and it's year long. It's just more people sometimes find it easier to talk about this time of year. Lisa, what are you talking about? All right. Well, we have Sarah Seidelman with us here today. She is shamanic practitioner. And if you might remember, I did interview her before. She is the author of Swimming with Elephants, The Book of Beasties, which I interviewed her for, which if you didn't get it, it's an amazing coffee table book because people can't help but pick it up and flip to a page. So that's my little FYI if you want to get a really cool coffee table book. And she also wrote Born to Freak. She's here today to talk about a fantastic event she has coming up here in Michigan. But this is why right now, if you're listening and you're not in Michigan, it's okay because the information she's going to give is so important that I want you to stick with us, okay? Hey, Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Lisa?
I'm
glad to be here.
Good. Thank you for coming back on. And first of all, let me tell everybody what the name of your event is. It's called Till Death Do Us Start. That is a very unique title, okay?
Yeah.
In a thumbnail sketch, tell us what the event is about.
The event is about really, what I've discovered in my own life and talking with many people is that by kind of keeping death as a close ally, we really become empowered to live our life. And so we're going to kind of have a tiny Baskin-Robbins, like pink tasting spoon size encounter with the near-death experience, but just a little bit of that. And we're really going to look at our lives and assess what's going on and also get to the juicy part of, like, why is it that we're here and what is our work? So that we can check in with where we're at and then we can go about shifting things if anything needs to shift. Because I've just found that by having my own close brushes with death, it has really like helped me to make some of the most powerful shifts in my life. And I thought, like, we don't need to wait for our deathbeds, because for ourselves to use this powerful this relationship that we have to death. So that's kind of in a nutshell what we're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be like gloomy or terrifying or anything like that. I think it's more like a rebirthing experience is what my intention is for the group. And so I'm just so excited and I feel so aligned with this work. So yeah.
Okay.
It's November 16th.
Yep,
so coming up.
November 16th at the Birmingham Unitarian Church on Woodward in Bloomfield Hills. And everybody, look, when she says we're going to, whatever, have our near-death experience or whatever, it's not like she's going to make you jump off a cliff or, skydive or
no.
Anything like that, okay? I don't want you to be freaked out by that. But there are little nuggets of information and insights that people are going to be given about the relationship to death, because it is a relationship, right?
Absolutely. And I think, each one of us has probably had that experience when we lose somebody that we love, that experience of encountering just the death of another person reminds us that, we all are here for a brief period of time or a limited period of time. And often it'll motivate us to change what we're doing because we realize, oh my gosh, like maybe I don't have 50 years to do this one thing I want to do. Like maybe I need to start Monday, or tomorrow or right now.
Absolutely. And what was your brush with death? What can you share with us?
So I've had multiple different sort of ways of connecting with death, but probably one of the more direct ones that occurred to me is I was diagnosed with melanoma when I was age 19. And at that time, you're carefree, just in college, having a good time, thinking you're immortal. At least I was. I never considered death really as a possibility. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, I was being like taken quickly to surgery. And then I was told that, there was no treatment for this. If it came back, it was going to be, there would be no option of therapy. It would be just kind of, that would be it. And they taught me how to look for the signs of recurrence, what it would look like, how it would feel. And then I went, you know, started seeing the oncologist for frequent visits. So anybody who's listening right now who's had a diagnosis of cancer maybe has had a similar experience. But I remember just thinking, my family was very upset. All my friends were kind of upset. But ultimately, it was sort of like this, you know, a personal thing between me and death. I mean, nobody could really help me through that besides me sitting with it. And what happened for me is I just recognized that at the time I was in pre-med, I was a super duper like type A student. And I realized, my gosh, you know, like if I'm only going to be around, like let's say I'm going to be dead in 6 months, I certainly don't want to spend it doing what I've been doing recently, which was like being completely obsessed with school. I want to balance it. Like I want to go to parties and have fun. Like, and I for the first time like started showing up at parties in college and, you know, just enjoying myself and making a point to do fun things. Because I just become all work and no play. And so death was a real wake up call for, you know, to live my life. And I know that Lisa, you mentioned you had an experience as well, and maybe you can, and I can tell you more other experiences too that took me even deeper into that relationship with death. But tell me, what happened for you?
Well, it was very significant in my life. I'm actually a 2-time kidney transplant recipient and a cancer survivor as well. And after my first kidney transplant when I was 16 years old, I ended up having 5 grand mal seizures and ended up going to the other side. And it was very, I say this, there are no words in any language, as far as I'm concerned, that can accurately describe the beauty and the peace and the joy that I felt. So at 16 years of age, I was going into the light. And I remember the feeling of just pushing into the light because that's all that I cared about. And then right as I was ready to go in, I was held in place. And I remember pushing against the force. And I said, no more needles, no more pain, please let me stay, because I wanted to stay dead. And the voice came back and said, no, I don't know if it was male or female. I know in my heart who I believe it is, and I'm okay if anybody else doesn't believe that. But when I heard no, then my chest kind of collapsed in, and I came rushing away from the light at a very high rate of speed and ended up in the, you know, ICU where I woke up after all of this. And
wow.
At 16 years old, I knew what I had been through. What I didn't know was why I was back. And so, and that's like what we try to discover our whole lives, right? Why are we here?
Yeah. Why are we here?
You know?
Yeah. And do you remember, like, did it help you, like, experiencing that love and that pure peace? Did it help you to trust life more? Did it help you to relax a little bit more and not be as afraid? Or was there any kind of outcome of that?
Yeah, well, the outcome was that my psychic and intuitive senses went off the charts after I got back, and I kind of knew things, and I felt a closer connection and light to things like animals and plants, and it's just like everything was alive. And
wow.
I remember thinking, oh, that's so great. Look at that. That's alive. And I remember being very drawn to figure out why people go through life sad or why they go through life not feeling well when we're given the greatest gift of all, which is to be alive. And so I want you to talk a little bit, though, about why people are so afraid to talk about death, because I have absolutely zero fear of death now. Zero.
Oh, my gosh. And that in and of itself is such a massive gift, because, like, I think when we're not afraid of death, then we're also, conversely, not afraid of life and living it. I think, and you're quite, I just got so distracted by what you just said, but I'm like, you just asked me something.
I wanted to know why people, A, are so afraid of death, and B, why they're so afraid to even talk about it.
Yeah, I think over time, over the last 100 years, you know, we've become progressively more obsessed with science and almost, I would say, worshiping at that altar. So science in the medical community. And so instead of like taking our own, you know, like 100 years ago, I think people were less afraid to die. Death was much more common. When people died in our family, we held their funerals in our living room. You know, we were very comfortable, you know, not that anyone of us wanted people and our loved ones to die, but I think it was a much more, it was part of our lives. And then as all the science kind of stepped forward, and also the kind of industrialization of maybe sort of funerals and all those things being made into more of a business, mm-hmm. Which, you know, has been a wonderful service to many families, not to say that's a bad thing, but it's taken it out of our hands. And I think consequently people, you know, when we don't connect with something or don't have contact with it, and it becomes less comfortable for us. And then I think too, we've started to think, well, doctors can save us or medicine can save us from whatever it is, you know, and putting all our trust and faith in that. And I think, and you can see that in the way, you know, as a physician, in the way that, you know, many people now die in ICUs rather than like in their own, in the comfort of their own home, just because of the way, you know, the way things are. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a combination of all those factors and a kind of a collective denial. I mean, somebody was saying, you know, there's one thing that surprises many of us. It's like the moment of surprise is when you realize, you know, you're going to die or that somebody died, like we're surprised. But, mm-hmm. But yet we all know, I mean, intellectually, we know that we're, you know, we're not here forever.
Right.
But it's sort of this comfortable denial. But what the beauty is when you sit with death and you think about like your own death, and we're going to have some practices that we're going to do in this retreat, in this day long workshop, you know, it's an empowering experience, and we're going to have a taste of maybe what you tasted, maybe not quite as potent because, you know, what you experienced was something that really is a gift, or I would say, and I don't know if you feel the same way about
I
it,
do.
But that it was a gift from the divine, you know, that made you who you are and made you into this very special person who is, you know, hardwired now to go out and change the world. And so I think everybody's going to learn whatever it is that they need to learn. But you know, one of the things that really got me thinking about doing a retreat like this is there's that beautiful blog that was circulating by a hospice nurse from Australia, and it's like the top 5 regrets of the dying. Mm. I don't know if you remember that one making the rounds.
No, tell me about it.
She sat with many patients who were in the process of dying, and she began to kind of record with their permission, you know, what if they had any regrets, what were they? And it was just so fascinating. And if you guys are listeners, just Google top 5 regrets of the dying and you will get the entire list. But there were things like, you know, I wish I would have been myself instead of trying to please all the people around me and trying to be somebody who I'm not. You know, I wish I wouldn't have spent so much time at work. And that was a huge one. I think she made the point, especially for men, because, you know, in our culture, you know, work and, you know, and being a breadwinner is such a, you know, a huge push or, a, you know, a huge thread for men, but, you know, doing too much of it, we might regret.
Yeah.
And so I think these questions are wonderful for us to sit with before, you know, death is upon us or before we have some life-threatening condition. We don't have to wait for ourselves to get a cancer diagnosis. Too, maybe, you know, I know, like, I was just thinking about a dear friend of mine who committed suicide a few years ago, who was an amazing person, and none of his friends really knew how much or to the degree to which he was suffering. And his death was a big teaching. So, and I'm guessing that many of the people that are listening maybe have had somebody die who was close to them and, you know, got something very profound from that. So I think, and what I've realized since his death is like, that even though his physical body is gone, you know, I think of him all the time. He comes into my dreams. Mm-hmm. He showed me a beautiful message that he was going to be there for my family members as they pass on, which was just a huge and mm-hmm. beautiful gift that I got from him.
Well, and as you start to create a different relationship with death, you start to realize that this is just another form of communication. A different way of feeling. So let's say someone's dealing with a loved one right now who's at the end of life, and they mm-hmm. still get to, you know, chat with them now, even though they're in and out of consciousness or whatever. So they feel like, I still can communicate with this person. When they die, I'm not going to be able to know if they're okay. How do you feel about that?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the way I think about it and in shamanism is that, you know, it's like we're all we're all spirit. And so, you know, death is merely like this transition of that energy that goes, you know, that's presenting in this world and then shifting into another world. But these two different worlds, the world of spirits and this sort of earthly place, you know, there are doorways between those things, those two places. Mm-hmm. And I think often, you know, our loved ones can communicate through us to us through animals. So sometimes, and you know, in my book, Book of Beasties, like many people I have met have told the most profound and beautiful stories about a bird entering their yard or seeing butterflies come to sit on their lap, and how they knew, they had this deep, deep knowing that this was a visit from their loved one.
Mm-hmm,
that's one of the most beautiful ways they can. Others, you know, sometimes it's pennies, you know, they have that thing, pennies from heaven.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And these are such strange, mystical stories, but I have a friend who hair ties, her husband who died a few years ago, leaves her hair ties wherever she goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. They're like saying scrunchies are coming back. Woohoo!
Yeah! Exactly.
Yay for the scrunchie! what I want people to understand just briefly about your, you don't have to be dying or helping someone who's dying to want to come to this event. This is, and you even put it right here, it galvanizes you into action to create a fuller life. It's about paying attention to what is going on in your world right now and saying, what do I need to do to kick myself in the behind to get living life, right?
Exactly. Yes. Like one question, if you're not coming to their retreat, one question to ask yourself might be like, if I knew I was going to be gone in a year from this world, what is it that I would want to be damn sure I do between now and then? Like, what is most important? What needs to be made right? What do you want to deepen in your relationships? You know, is there something that an event you want to create? Is there something you need to say? Is there a letter you want to write? These are the things that can just, you know, be transformative in your day-to-day living. And you don't have to wait, like you said. So this is for people who really want to live and who want to show up in their families, in their relationships, in their creative work, in their entrepreneurial work, to just be on top of their game. And that may sound sort of strange, but I think death is a very powerful teacher.
Right. And don't be worried about being pushed outside your comfort zone, everyone, if you decide to come to this, because we all know that's where life really happens. And this is a way for you to get a handle on that and say, I'm pushing through it anyways. I listen to, you know, public speakers, you know, their videos and, you know, on YouTube and all of that. And I think it was Les Brown who talks about the richest place on the face of the earth is, you know, at the cemetery, because along with all those people are all the dreams and ideas buried with them that they never brought to fruition. So,
wow.
Yeah. If you think about that and you're like, okay, and there's going to be that side of you that says, yeah, well, someone else already created that, or, but it's not by you. You have a lot to offer.
Exactly. I know I had a really wonderful dream, or it was a challenging dream, but I went and it was this dream, and the spirits were asking me, like, what do you want to create in your next life? And I thought to myself, what do I want to create in my next life? And I was like, I want to experience like the love of a lifetime. I've met several people who said, you know, they're with they're like their soulmate. And I've struggled with that for years. Like, I know I'm with a great man, but like, I don't know if it's my soulmate, because boy, this is hard. And at the end of that dream, I realized when I came back to this world, like, There was no reason to wait for another lifetime. Like, right now is when I needed to create this love of a lifetime. And so I went about beginning to work towards that. And now I can say that I feel like I am living with the love of my lifetime. And it's so wonderful.
I love that. Oh, see, that gives me hope and joy.
Yeah. And who knows what it might be for you who are listening, but there's something that needs to be done, that only you can do it.
Yeah. Now, if someone were not able to make it to this particular event, but say they still want to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
You can come to my website, followyourfeelgood.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Sarah Seidelman. I'm always posting lots of inspiration and feel-good ideas, and I do shamanic healing and life coaching and all sorts of things. And so if you're interested in experiencing this tiny Baskin-Robbins type spoonful encounter with guests and meet guests and see, you know, what does it have to teach you, I would be be honored to work one-on-one with you as well.
Yeah, and if you are going through something in your own life right now, like you're thinking about a job change, you don't feel like you're really doing what you're supposed to do, remember, Sarah went from being, was it a pathologist, to saying, I don't want to do that anymore. Now I want to go way over here. And so Swimming with Elephants is about that. That book, Swimming, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So
that's a story, yep.
Yep, the Swimming with Elephants book is the one you're going to want to do if you're thinking about, I'm in the wrong place, or I'm in the wrong career, or I need to make a change in my life. That's the book you're going to want to sort of at least start with that. But if you are in Michigan and you, on Saturday, November 16th, it's a day-long sort of retreat, 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., amazing topic. You will transform, okay? Because you can't immerse yourself in this type of discussion, in this type of experience and exercises that Sarah's going to have you work with and not transform. So you might feel uncomfortable. You might cry, but you also are going to have amazing breakthroughs and maybe some pretty terrific aha moments. Right, Sarah?
That's right. And you're going to hang out with a bunch of other amazing, like-hearted people. And we are going to, it's going to be very gentle and very loving and very, I think, really transformative. So I just can't wait.
Yeah, and all of this information is going to be up on our website as well, even, you know, how to get a hold of Sarah. We're definitely going to be, you know, talking. I'm so excited about this event because people shy away from it all the time. And I'm like, wow, Sarah's like running, you know, head first into it.
I know. Tell me about it.
Girl, you're like, oh, no, I do it. But, you know, we are so happy to have had you here today. We do have something, or I do anyways. It's called the RL3, Real Life 3. It's just three silly, goofy questions that we like to ask you just because we want to find out more about you. Are you game for that?
Yeah.
Of course you are.
I am so game.
All right, here we go. First question. Let me just pick a really good one here. Oh, well, we got to do this because of the time of year. Okay. Favorite Halloween costume ever, child or adult, doesn't matter. Favorite Halloween costume ever.
That I ever did?
Uh-huh, that you ever wore or whatever.
Well, I have to say, I wore a really awkward costume one time when I was, let me tell you the way. I was once in Austin Powers, one of his, you know, from the movie, the girls who had, like, the guns coming out of their bras. Like, my friend had
yes.
costume. Took on those personas for the entire evening, so that was pretty fun.
Oh, girl, I would have never guessed you for that. That's good. That's good. All right, here we go with question number two. My go-to snack is?
Oh, I don't snack anymore. I only eat meals, so I don't even have one.
What? All right, well, go back when you didn't just eat that. What was your go-to snack at the time?
Oh, my go-to snack used to be a handful of chocolate chips.
Just straight up like here's some chips. That's it? No, not attached to a cookie or anything?
No. Well, if somebody made cookies, I would take those. But yeah, usually it was just chocolate chips. I'm not saying it was the best snack, but
you're like, okay, that's new. I thought I was like, you're gonna say like potato chips or something like that, but okay, just a handful of those. All right. Here we go. Moving on to question number three to wrap it up. And this one is, who is your free pass celebrity?
Free pass? Like, if I could get a free pass to be with them?
Yep.
I'd say Oprah for sure.
Oprah?
No question asked. And I'm going to go see her in January, so.
Okay. Oprah's going
to
be who you're hanging with.
Minnesota.
Who are you being with? Like, this
who
is.
Who am I being?
Your husband would not be happy about this if you were with somebody.
I don't know if he'd want to join me on that one with Oprah.
He'd be like, all right, you and Lady O can go ahead and, have your time there together. I'm not going to interrupt that. Does he have a free pass celebrity?
Oh, honey, Pat. Oh, I see what you're getting at.
Uh-huh. I'm like, where are you going with this, Sarah? Like, come on.
I'm so innocent up here in Minnesota. Oh, free Pat.
Uh-huh.
No. Oh, Coro, for sure. Good Lord. I had no idea what you were asking me. I'm just really a little dense.
Say his name again.
Benicio del Toro.
See, she so likes him. You can tell because she says his name correctly. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Right now, my big obsession is any of them on Chicago Fire. I got a weird firefighter thing, but it's okay. I'm good with that, and I own it. So I like that. Well, Sarah, I am so blessed that you were able to come on today and talk with us and laugh with us. I want everybody to go ahead, and we're going to post all of this. But if you are in the Michigan area, Saturday, November the 16th, 9 a.m. to 3:30, it is Till Death Do Us Start. With Sarah Seidelman out at the Birmingham Unitarian Church. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us today.
Thank you, Lisa. Grateful.